The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So it all went down 4 years ago, and we all remember it. Cliven Bundy and his sons refused to pay federal grazing fees and then stared down the government agents as they attempted to confiscate their cattle. It kicked off an armed standoff with many people fearing outcomes like Ruby Ridge. After the situation cooled, Cliven and his two sons and a militia member were arrested. And in the words of Cliven Bundy, they were political prisoners ever since. Yesterday, a federal judge threw out the government's case against the Bundys and set them all free. The judge used the words flagrant and reckless. Not for the Bundys. Those were the words she used to describe the government and the way they withheld evidence from the defense. It turns out the information the federal agents were withholding were information regarding records about surveillance at the Bundy Ranch, maps about the government surveillance, records about the presence of government snipers, FBI logs about activities at the ranch leading up to the standoff, a 2012 law enforcement assessment that found that the Bundys posed no threat, and internal affairs reports about misconduct by BLM agents. Holy cow! Imagine if we went to war with a country and our soldiers misbehaved, we did all kinds of research on it, we had all kinds of facts that showed none of this was really true, and the people that we went after, there were reports that said they weren't really a threat to us. And then the CIA tried to cover it all up. Well, that's exactly what this sounds like. Although the outcome for the Bundy family turned out happy, the story is troubling for three different reasons. Number one, the Bundys and everyone involved in the standoff enabled this to escalate way out of control. It should have never gotten as far as it did. But number two, the government likewise went off the rails with this in the way that they behaved is insane for America. A massive surveillance operation, snipers, out of control BLM agents, and then trying to lie to cover it all up. And number three, this is the most important. This story is much larger than the Bundys, the misconduct of the federal agents, and most of the other headlines that you're going to see about this story. It's bigger than this. The story really is about one thing. The federal government has zero business managing public land, period. Judge Navarro called the government's actions in handling the Bundy case, quote, a reckless disregard for constitutional obligations, end quote. Yes, somebody who's actually a judge used the word constitution in their ruling in an appropriate way. But I contend the entire premise for the government seizing land and then charging private citizens to work on it is also a reckless disregard for constitutional obligations. Here's a notice to Washington, D.C. You have no right meddling or managing public land. The people who live around the land are much more qualified and they care much more. It belongs to the 321 million people that live here in America. And quite honestly, as somebody who has a piece of land that is surrounded by public land, we don't want your help. Nor do we need it.
It's Tuesday, January 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I hope to have the Bundys on. This is a real day of vindication for them. And, you know, I had the Bundys on, and I really agreed with them. I disagreed with the way they handled it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a vindication of how they handled it.
No, it's not.
It's a vindication of their legal case, right? I mean, and their arguments that they made many times that the government was overreaching.
Yes, the government was out of control. Government is out of control. And they were right. And when I had them on, I just kept saying to them, but don't behave this way. You can't put a sniper on a bridge or encourage people to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, there was a long period there where they were seen as these horrible people. And you know, you talk to them. They definitely were not.
They were not horrible.
Horrible people. And this is a big deal. You know, these stories, you know, it's something about our news cycle in which these stories come and go, and the conclusions are not part of the cycle.
Yeah.
You know, here's a big conclusion. You know, a lot of people argued that the government was doing things that it should not have been doing. And now the courts agree. It's a big deal.
It's a really big deal. But it won't get the kind of coverage that the original arrest and everything else.
And just quickly on this, you know, one of the big things is that look at what they're doing. There are people there. And the Bundys were never the ones doing this. But there are people there supporting them that were threatening federal agents, that were pointing guns at them.
Not good.
Right now, our FCC commissioner is having to cancel public appearances because of death threats over net neutrality. This is happening currently. Have you heard a word about it from the same people who were covering the Bundy situation? This is not a situation that is getting even remotely close to the amount of attention that the Bundy situation got at the time. So when the government is shown to have screwed this up and acted inappropriately, there's no real coverage of it. And now that people on the left are threatening multiple public officials.
Multiple.
Over the administrator
for the EPA has to have $2 million of personal security now because their life is in danger. Because they're the administrator of the EPA.
Well, the left loved administrators.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They love them. They love them. As long as you're administrating what they want, which gets us into Google, and we'll talk about that coming up later on in the program. Today, we posted at glennbeck.com. We've broken my 2018 predictions down into four different categories. And these, I do not put these into the category, some of them I do, of like the caliphate. This is me looking for things that I say, okay, so what's trending? What do I think is going to happen? You know, the some of the predictions that I have made in the past, quite honestly, I don't, I didn't have to think about those. They just hit me. So I just want to separate, these are Glenn predictions, if you will, that I sat down and said, okay, so what are the trends doing? So I put a few predictions down, and I think some of them are right, but we're asking you to vote, and for the next couple of days, they will be broken up in chunks. Today, they're all political, and you can find them at glennbeck.com.
And the idea is to kind of rank them as to what is the most likely to come true.
Yeah, and some of them are going to be hard because there's some of them that have several predictions in each one. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so, you know, which one is going to come true? Which one do you think
you're not backing out of this? Are you? Are you backing out of this? Is that what's happening?
No.
Have we seen this already? We're just starting, and you're backing.
40 of them, and there is going to be 39 that you're going to be able to beat me with a stick on. next year. Okay, so here's prediction number one: the freedom movement will experience a bit of a renaissance, both in the U.S. and globally. In the U.S., this will mostly manifest at the local level and be primarily pushed by millennial and Generation Z voters who will be completely disenchanted by the two major political parties. We'll see hundreds of new candidates from new political parties running in state, county, and local elections. Both Democrat and Republican parties will be forced to contend with significant weakness in recruiting and retaining younger voters, ultimately forcing them to change their platform stances to accommodate millennial and post-millennial Generation Z ideas and positions. Also, a new understanding of a kinder and more ethical capitalism will be rediscovered by millennials over socialism in the coming years. A new strain of, quote, non-hippie libertarianism will be formed. We'll see the early signs of this movement in 2018. It will be the alternative to a Bernie Sanders-style socialism. What do you think?
I'm going to go with disagree.
Go with disagree.
On that one. Really? Yep. Yeah, that's not happening.
Really?
Yes, the American people don't care about that stuff anymore. I honestly do think that, like, there is...
This is driven by millennials, though. I think they do care.
You know,
They don't care about the parties, and they don't believe in any of that.
But they disagree. They're super passionate about the parties. If anything has been taught to us over the past couple of years, I think, is that people really freaking care about that red versus blue battle. It is the most important thing in politics that they care about. It's that. And look, that summarizes a lot of things. A lot of things that are really material, right? I mean, real policy differences. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of it in there. I just don't think that that's the primary concern of people who, you know, the average person who's not listening to 15, 30 hours of talk radio every week. The average person cares only about that red versus blue battle. So the idea that they're going to lock into some third party or some out of the system thing, I'm going to go ahead and disagree on that.
Okay, well, I just think that millennials, generally speaking, are going to, they're so disgusted by all of it. They don't believe either side. They believe one side or the other more. But they don't. They're disgusted by it, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And I think there's a new attitude coming with the leaders of millennials. Remember, it takes 10% to really change things. 18% is the tipping point. So it's not going to. I mean, I'm not talking about 80% of millennials doing this.
Right.
I'm talking about a good chunk of them.
I think four of them doing anything would be a...
Don't count
It would
those
be a
guys.
Bit of a renaissance.
Don't
a,
count no, those
I,
guys out.
I'm not, you know, counting them out, but I do think that what we're seeing now, in my opinion, is more of an association of, yeah, you're right, they're sick of it. They're sick of the way things are going.
Yeah.
But how they crystallize that in their own lives is attacking the other side.
So
they're sick of that, those people,
so,
not themselves.
So in this, both Republican and Democratic parties will be forced to contend with significant weaknesses in recruiting and retaining younger voters. What that includes in there is the Democrats are going to move to more socialist ideas. They are going to the Bernie Sanders thing. And I don't know if it'll be with Bernie Sanders, but the Bernie Sanders thing, socialism is going to become very, very popular. But at the same time, a new understanding of freedom, one that actually that actually believes in diversity. That actually says, yeah, I don't care if you get married or not, the government shouldn't be involved. I don't care if you go to church or you don't go to church, the government shouldn't be involved. Are you a decent person? Are you hurting people? Are you like stealing money? Are you trying to take people's stuff? Are you trying to kill people? It's going to be boiled down to a much simpler, more constitutional Bill of Rights kind of freedom on the other side.
I feel like we're both looking outside and seeing really dark clouds, and I'm predicting rain and you're predicting suntan time. You're predicting laying out by the pool and it's 40 degrees. And for some reason you're thinking it's all going to clear and go to 80 later on in the afternoon. So get your bathing suits on.
I cannot believe how much we've flipped places.
You are way more optimistic on this. I have no hope on these things anymore.
You used to be the guy saying the exact opposite to me.
Yes, that's true.
That's weird.
And I've been proven wrong, clearly.
Okay, next prediction. Churches will continue to lose power and influence through 2018. Those who preach politics over principles and power over people in their own communities will lose more and more influence. The more hellfire that is preached, the bigger the hit. Even though in times of strife and demagoguery, these flourish for a short time, but they will collapse. Traditional institutions that claim to be infallible and that discourage thought and honest questions on their own doctrine will be hardest hit. At the same time, megachurches that are more show will suffer and shed sheep to flocks who embody through quiet and humble action a simple, happy, and charitable life.
It's interesting. I mean, because you were talking about millennials. What is it now? A third of millennials think the church does more damage
yes.
to society than good for society. I mean, I think you're right. The one place you should be able to chase principle with no pragmatism at all is church. You should never make a church based a decision when you're talking about faith-based things that's, you know, that's related to pragmatism, right? What I want to go into church and then to tell me the thing that seems most obvious is the thing you shouldn't do because of this guiding principle from this book that's really old that we've been talking about for a long time.
Right.
And I think a lot of churches have gone, and we've certainly seen it on the left, and I think increasingly on the right, that have looked at the world and have formed their message based on the world and how it's moved, rather than a stone tablet, right? Or the place where it lives
yeah,
all the time and it never changes.
But it's also, I think there's a difference now coming on. I want action. I do not want to just go sit in a church.
Mm-hmm.
I want something that changes my life. I want something that goes out and does good. I want to be involved in doing things and helping people and show it to me. Don't talk to me about it. Let's do it.
And feel it, right? I mean,
yeah. I think that's what's coming. I think the pomp and circumstance, the traditional ways that we have connected religiously are falling away. And the churches that figure out that a church is just a place, it's a building, a real church, you should be in it all the time. And it's everywhere. It's everywhere you go. And it's how you live your life. I think those will prosper. We'll see. More in a second.
Glenn Beck.
Glad you're here. The third prediction at glennbeck.com on politics. We're going to unveil these for the rest of the week in sections, tech, medicine, etc. Here's the politics. Here's the third one, and you can vote on these. Hillary Clinton and Uma are going to be charged with crimes. Yeah, no, I was kidding. I wrote that at the end. And I'm like, yeah, that would be fun. But Bitcoin is more likely to be at $1 million next Friday than that happening. So, more of the predictions, and you can get them all by signing up at glennbeck.com. You can also vote on these predictions, and I'd love to hear, what you think is just crazy talk, and, you know, you can vote up or down which ones you think are most likely to happen. Do that now at glennbeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Listening to the Glenn Beck program.
All right. Today we're talking politics and what's on the horizon for 2018. You can find them at glennbeck.com and you can upvote the ones that you think are most likely to happen. Prediction number four, the press at large will continue to discredit themselves and be discredited by the White House. And it will happen on both sides. MSNBC and Breitbart and others that will play to the rabid core of the right or left will prosper over the short term during the run-up to the midterms. It will be the same approach that will precipitate a quick downfall in the early 2020s.
Your date on Breitbart might have been a little early.
Yeah,
as that one seems to be falling apart. At the president's desk right now.
Do you know? Have any idea how Breitbart is faring? Have you seen any Google Analytics or anything?
I have not seen that. I mean, I know obviously there was reporting of their traffic and stuff going down earlier, but yeah. I think with this,
I think Breitbart is in real trouble if they do not distance themselves from Bannon.
Right. I mean,
fire Bannon, they can repair it, but they.
Again, we've said this before. There's people there that are good. It's got obviously a considerable history in conservative circles. I mean, you know, Breitbart was the guy who built the site. Mm-hmm. Bannon, he hijacked it. So, I mean, you can go back, I think. I don't think that generally speaking, the conservative audience would hold them to what Bannon has done to that
Correct.
Site. I think that they would be able to recover because
Me
of the
too.
History. I
mean,
Me I, you know, I think the move of getting him out of there would be really helpful. To
I thought that it was going to happen because the Mercers distanced themselves from everybody was distancing themselves. And there was talk that the board met last Thursday, but
yeah, the fact that he's still there,
he
thinks he's staying.
Yeah. He's
right.
Staying.
That stuff happens usually pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And once it starts to drag on like this and he's still there, I mean,
it's his arrogance that has gotten him in trouble.
He's got a lot of, you know, he's got a lot of power over there, and he's going to try to, he's obviously tried to already backstep and worm from the ultimate alpha male. He's tried to backstep himself out of that Trump comment and the Don Jr. stuff.
I wonder how different it would have been if Roy Moore would have won.
Yeah, because it's interesting. The Wolf book was over the time, and a big part of the focus was on the time where he felt triumphant over the Moore thing. Remember, it was Moore. He was picking Roy Moore, and Trump had picked Luther Strange.
And there's a whole chapter on the book about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Bannon is saying, you know, I was the only one that was standing for principles. I was the one doing this, and this is what Trumpism is supposed to be about. But he wouldn't do it.
Right. And I was proved correct with Roy Moore. I won.
Right.
Well, now, obviously, we know the end of that story, which is we have a Democratic senator in Alabama.
Right.
So maybe he didn't win. And look, you know, as the president said, once he said something about Bannon, his tune changed pretty quick. And now he's trying to back himself out. He's trying to do the Homer Simpson disappear into the bush routine.
Yeah.
Whether that's going to work or not, I don't know. Maybe it will.
The Me Too movement is going to continue to grow in 2018-19, and 2018-19 will be the apex of the witch hunt. In 2018, it will be used to discredit Donald Trump and then spread to the midterms. It sadly will become a joke in the end. It will not be effective, I don't think, against Donald Trump. However, it will destroy what positive brand image, if any, the GOP still has with anyone under 35. It will also hurt the actual cries of victims.
So you think it turns into
just a political witch hunt. With the midterms coming, it's going to be so overdone, and they're going to use this on Donald Trump that it's going to become it's just going to be split down the middle because it's all just about politics. Period.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it seems like it's coming to now. Did you hear the Ben Shapiro comments on this?
On Oprah's speech?
Yeah, on the whole speech thing. Because, I mean, it's the amount of denial you have to be in to act like Hollywood is leading the charge in the Me Too movement when they're responsible for almost all of it is just insane. Ben Shapiro talked about that. Listen.
I mean, what the hell kind of risk was she taking? She was standing in front of an entire town filled with sexual abusers and harassers. Mm. She said nothing about it for 20 years. She's being cheered by people who said nothing about it for 20 years. And there she is, pretending that she's leading the fight. In what way has she led the fight? I sort of missed it. And just because she said some stuff last night, I haven't seen how things have materially changed. I mean, Reese Witherspoon was mentioned that she measures things before Oprah and after Oprah. What changed after Oprah? Oprah said a bunch of stuff. Well, I was under the impression that most of us agreed with that stuff when this stuff first broke, and she lauded the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Where were they reporting on the sexual harassment and abuse scandal for the last 20 years? It is literally their job to cover Hollywood, and yet it took The New Yorker and Ronan Farrow to uncover all this stuff. Where was the Hollywood Foreign Press Association receiving such plaudits at the hands of Oprah Winfrey? Again, a woman who is good friends with Harvey Weinstein, being cheered by Meryl Streep, a woman who gave a standing ovation to Roman Polanski.
I mean, Ben Shapiro almost made my prediction. list. He almost did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost put Ben Shapiro will be the leader of the new conservative thought movement. He is, I mean, he is, he's fantastic. He is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's see. I've got some gun rights stuff. I've only got time for maybe...
Just quickly, just before we move on, do almost predictions count? Like you said, you thought you almost put them on the list. Do we give you credit for that if it happens? I'm just curious because it's
no,
one of those...
I didn't think it was a, you know, I didn't think it was a real...
You'll be claiming credit, of course.
Of course I will.
Okay.
Yeah, of course I will. Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the gun rights activists... and advocates will finally get their long-sought concealed carry reciprocity bill through Congress. I believe that's going to happen this year.
That's a big one.
It's a huge one. It's a huge
one. So this would mean if I get a concealed carry permit in Texas, I can go to New York or Washington, D.C.
and carry it.
And carry it, and they can't stop me.
Yeah. Well, they can, like New York City could stop you. It's like reciprocity. I can't ever say that word. Mm-hmm. It means that, like, for instance, I go to some states that I have a concealed carry. I can't carry my gun, even though they have a concealed carry permit. I can't carry my gun because they don't accept my gun license there, but they'll accept my driver's license. So in states or in areas where you cannot drive, they're not going to accept your driver's license. I was on the road with a car, officer. Yeah, we don't drive in this state. We don't drive here. So if they're issuing gun license, then you have your gun license is in Texas. It's good in Maine. It's good in Massachusetts. It's good in South Carolina. It's good wherever, just like a driver's license.
Right. Well, but I mean, they can't. There's this constitutionally guaranteed right. They can't.
Well, that
driving is, I mean,
But the way I see it, okay, could be wrong. The way I see it is that you're just going to be you have one gun license, just like a driver's license. However, when I go to Montana, the state says there's a minimum speed limit, and I think the minimum is like 55 miles an hour, and you can the maximum is like 120. Well, just because I have a license in that state doesn't mean I can go, you know, 90 miles an hour in Texas.
You still have to follow local laws.
You have to follow the local laws,
but it would
your license is good there,
and but it would guarantee you the right to carry. You'd obviously still have to follow
not laws, not necessarily in California.
Really?
If you can't carry in California.
But you can, I mean, you have to be able to carry.
Yeah, I know.
We've had
I know.
Multiple Supreme Court decisions.
If you can't carry in New York City, then you can't carry.
You just have to, because I mean, all has the issue to be, with carrying in New York City, right, is it's difficult to get the right to do that. It's difficult.
Correct.
It's actually not at all difficult to get the right to do it. It's guaranteed to you.
Yes.
But it's difficult to get the privilege to execute that right.
Correct.
In New York City. But my thought would be, if you have a license, you can go to these other places, and you already have the license. The license is the thing that's hard to get in New York City, right? So if you have the license coming in, wouldn't you be able to carry in that region?
I mean,
you know more about this stuff than
I
do.
I think in a perfect world, yes.
Yes, they're going to fight that, obviously, every step of the way.
That is going to be fought every step of the way. A big enough step would be that I can carry in all 50 states, as long as I'm abiding by the local rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that seems so blatantly
obvious.
If
you get onto a plane, you can't, carry on the plane, but after you unload it from the six boxes you've had to break it up in, you can't carry it in all states.
Well, this would be either way a really positive thing. And with control of all, get this done in 2018, because if you lose the House or the Senate, you're never going to get it done.
The U.S. Supreme Court will finally strike down pro-labor laws that will enable unions to take dues from workers. That would be huge.
Seems obvious, too.
The Trump administration will actually finally begin construction on a true wall between U.S. and Mexico using discretionary funds provided for border protection and law enforcement and the new infrastructure spending by the Republican-controlled Congress in early 2018. There will be a compromise on the Dreamers as well as an agreement to renew NAFTA.
You feel comfortable with that sort of arrangement? Hey, all the dreamers get to stay, and we'll have all this DACA stuff going on. And on the other side, you'll get some. You're not going to get the wall as promised, but you'll get some portion of the wall.
If I believed that we had the wall, I would be willing to talk about other things. I'm not happy about it. I don't want to, but I'd be willing to.
And that's essentially
Trump's
position,
right? A wall.
Right. Yeah. It seems like that's Trump's position. However, a wall means what to you? I'm curious because we, you know.
Not what we're going to get.
Because I think what we will get is stretches of wall that basically justify the claim that we built a wall. Right.
Here's what I want.
Rather than a wall, you know, a border-to-border type of situation.
I want a wall where it makes sense to have a wall. And then I want a wall of technical or human security where it doesn't make sense to have a wall.
Right. Where there's maybe.
Right. I don't want any holes in the border. I don't want like, hey, look over here. It's a wall. Yeah. But look over here. And there's a line of people walking into America. I want security.
Mm-hmm.
Antifa. Coupled with Occupy Wall Street and others, will be funded through Soros-based organizations to stir up an impeach Trump movement, a march and sit-ins. It will rise and fall in importance and significance, but will impact the 2018 midterms and 2020 election.
2018, to me, seems to be the year you have to go for impeachment if you're the Democrats.
Yes.
Because once you get past 2018 and you're into 2019, the presidential campaign starts. It's going to be I mean, impeaching him would do what? Give Mike Pence a nice runway to win.
Yeah.
So I think like at that point, you really can't. You got to do it this year or you don't do it.
And the last one, I think maybe we should save. We'll take a quick break and then maybe save because it's about Russia and what I think is going to happen with the Russia investigation.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff that needs to be discussed on that one. We'll get to that coming up in a second. And you can find them at glennbeck.com.
And don't forget to vote at glennbeck.com because you can rank them in as to order of what you think is going to come true. And this will give you a little bit of responsibility as well because
I'd love to see what the audience thinks.
Yeah, I'll see which ones they believe is true.
You're not ranking them necessarily. Vote up for everything that you think is going to come true.
And the other one is vote down. My prediction is, and I don't think this matters to you, but that Alabama will win the next 14 national championships. That's my prediction.
Huh.
And I'm making it today.
Okay.
I'm sure you watched the game last night, obviously.
Oh, my
gosh.
Didn't go
to a movie on your anniversary or anything.
Not with my whole family, no. I saw Darkest Hour again last night.
Is there any symbolism in the fact that your wife wanted to go to the Darkest Hour on your anniversary?
Or to be in the dark with me, but surrounded by witnesses.
Other people.
Yeah.
Separated by children.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably. Yeah, let's not think about that.
Okay.
Glenn Beck.
All right. So here's the last one. I don't know if we're going to be able to really fully get into this, so let me read it, and then maybe we'll spend some time on it next hour. The Mueller-led investigation into Russia election hacking and any connection to the Trump administration will finally be put to rest with basically zero impact on the Trump administration. No significant charges being leveled.
No additional. I mean, like
nobody's going to go to jail for this. Nobody will go to jail.
Okay. Because I mean, obviously, there's been
I'm out on a
charged,
limb on this,
right?
One. I am so torn on this one because the reason why I say the special counsel will likely issue a report that is strongly anti-Russia and broadly implies that there were attempts by Russia and Russian agents to influence the election in favor of Trump. The report will be light on evidence or specifics, and no one will pay attention. Now, there's more to this that I have to get to because I think there is trouble on the horizon connected to this investigation.
Glenn Beck.
But because of Russia's power.